Washington Post calls her one of the best crime novelists in America, and even her fellow thriller suspense authors call her, quote, one of the boldest thriller writers working today. You're going to want to stick around and hear this. Today, I'm going between the lines of New York Times bestselling author Karen Slaughter. She's the author of 8 thrillers, including Blindsided, Fractured, Beyond Reach, and A Faint Cold Fear, which was named an International Book of the Month selection. Welcome, Karen.
Very glad to be here. Thank you.
All of your books are striking. But let's back up a little bit. Your previous 8 novels have been basically centered around 2 critically acclaimed series that you've started. The Grant County novels, which are about the pediatrician and part-time coroner, Sarah Linton, and also GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigation Special Agent Will Trent, has been featured in the most recent New York Times bestseller, Fractured. But give us a little bit more information about these 2 series and who the major characters are in them, so that when we talk about Undone, we'll have a basis, a point of reference.
Well, Grant County is my first series, and, you know, everybody tells writers to write what you know, and I know growing up in a small South Georgia town, I grew up in Jonesboro, and everybody now says, oh, that's not a small town, but when I was there, it was really small. Right. Yeah, my dad said everything went to hell when we got the shopping mall, and he was right in a lot of ways, but, you know, if I got in trouble downtown, by the time I got home, my mama had already whittled a switch for me, so I had that sense of that small town community, and so when I set out to start writing my first published novel, Blindsided, I wanted to write about that small town experience. But I think as important it is to write what you know, you should write what you want to know.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know about crime. You know, I grew up in Jonesboro at a time when the Atlanta child murders this was a really big thing, you know.
Yeah.
And my childhood had a very distinct before and after. You know, before the murders started occurring, I was living this idyllic little suburban life. And afterward, we had, you know, Monica Kaufman on TV saying, do you know where your children are? And everyone was really terrified.
Right.
And even though, you know, I was a little white girl living in the suburbs, I wasn't the profile of the victim. It was very terrifying for me. And in a really selfish way as a child, I was kind of upset that this was happening to me, you know, where I had to be in on a curfew and I couldn't go past a certain street and all these things. And it made me conscious of crime in a way that was really life-altering. And around that time, I started reading Flannery O'Connor. So you can imagine these early influences made me who I am today.
And I see that you read Heather Skelter.
Yes.
And Manson Family Story. And even Gone with the Wind, because you found what?
Yeah, there's a great murder in Gone with the Wind.
Right.
You know, and I do talk about that a little bit when I do my signings, because there's that scene in Gone with the Wind where Scarlett shoots the Yankee who's going to, you know, rape and pillage them. And Melly comes down the stairs, and Scarlett looks at her like, you know, are you going to faint? What are you going to do? And Melly says, let's bury the body. And that's a very pivotal moment in the story. And crime is a very good way to talk about character and the human condition. And when I'm writing Grant County, when I first started writing, I was very conscious of that and the stories that came before me. And if you think about crime fiction in a broader sense, such as The Great Gatsby, which is about a man being shot, you know, or To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a very pre-Grisham tense courtroom drama about an alleged rape, you know, all the good books have bodies in them, you know.
Right.
They have crime, they have murder.
Right.
You can go all the way back to Beowulf. I mean, thousands of people killed, or Shakespeare with Hamlet. So I think I'm in a good tradition when I'm writing about crime. And I want to talk about crime with Grant County in a way that shows how a small town is affected by something bad happening. And I really talk about these crimes that happen through 3 main characters in Grant County. One is the person you mentioned, Sarah Linton. She's the pediatrician / coroner. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Georgia, if you are willing to touch a dead body and you can get enough votes, you can be the town coroner.
Wow.
So it's really rare. Thankfully, we had the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to go in on the really serious crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very rare that the mortician is not the coroner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's a dentist. So it's just somebody who's willing to do the job. So Sarah has this job. She's also a doctor. So her father says, being a pediatrician, she gets them coming and going between both jobs. Her ex-husband is Jeffrey Tolliver, and he's the police chief. So when somebody dies, they have to get together. And then there's another character named Lena Adams. And Lena is the only female detective on an all-male police force. And even without that, she has quite a sizable chip on her shoulder. So the first six books, really, that I have written are about these characters. I took a break and wrote a book called Triptych in between the two last books.
Wasn't Triptych about Will, though?
Yeah, Triptych had Will Trent, and it took place in Atlanta. And the way I came up with this story was I live in Atlanta in Virginia Highland, and I was thinking about a story that opened with a dead prostitute. And I thought, yeah, we don't really have a lot of dead prostitutes in Grant County. I'm sure there are some, but I haven't really written about them before. And I needed a lot of anonymity. And Atlanta is great for anonymity.
Right. Great.
You know, in a small town, everybody thinks they know your business. Mm-hmm. But this was the way I started to get an introduction in my head to Will Trent. He works
And a lot more fodder.
Exactly,
for
a lot more people to kill than in a small town, you know?
Well, is it difficult bringing them together? Because in the latest novel, Undone, you bring Sarah and Will together. Undone opens with a young woman arriving in Sarah's emergency room, and she's been the victim of a car accident, but they immediately find out that the wounds aren't just limited to the car crash, but that something extremely disturbing and horrible has been happening to this young lady. And, of course, that's why GBI Special Agent Trent is then called in. This book explores several themes. Of course, one of the major ones being violence against women. You said that it's important for women to write openly about violence. Explain that comment.
Well, yeah, I consider myself a feminist in a classic sense. You know, that's a word that has a lot of negative connotations. People think it means anti-men in some camps. And to me, I think that if we take care of women, if we appreciate women in our society, if we respect them, everything else falls into place. And you see this in third world countries where if women are given microloans, they raise up the whole village. If men are given microloans, they get prostitutes and drink a lot. And I'm not saying this, you know, it's a really blanket mean statement to say about men.
No, but there is an African proverb that if you educate a woman, you educate a family.
Right.
You educate a man, you educate an individual.
Exactly.
And that's kind of like the same.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think in Undone, I was talking a little bit about that because the fact is there are more women than there are men in the world. So we have to take some responsibility for the way women are treated and we have to stand up. And, you know, it goes back to saying I'm a feminist. Well, a lot of people have negative reactions to the word feminist, and most of them are women because they think that you're going to be wearing Birkenstocks.
Right.
And, you know, the hair under your arms is going to go down to your knees or something. I think it's really important that we encourage the men in our lives to be feminists themselves. You know, one statistic I ran across when I was researching Undone is the fact that for the last 10 years, according to the FBI, 250,000 women a year are raped. And I mean, can you
imagine?
And
that's just the ones that are over 18.
Right. And who
were reported.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, and that's astounding to me. And you know, if we had someone like George Clooney stand up and say, you know, I mean, it's nice that he's outraged about Darfur, but there are atrocities going on here in our own country, you know, and I think he's got the time to maybe take on another issue. And you know, we don't talk about it. When do we hear about it in the news? When she dies. We don't hear about the woman who lives. We don't hear about her life after. And so when I was working on Undone, I was really conscious of this. I was conscious of the fact that women can sometimes be our own worst enemies.
I was going to ask you about
that. Yeah, and a lot of the victims are the people, women who are targeted in the book are not sympathetic characters. They're people who have been damaged in their lives, and they've do something that unfortunately is a typical thing for women to do when something bad happens to them is they find another way to punish themselves. And so this is where we are in Undone with women not being our best advocates.
And then hurting ourselves, making ourselves victims through things like bulimia and cutting, because you even have a book, Kiss Cut.
Yes.
That spoke to that too. Why do you think some of them are so anti themselves? Is it just social training or low? It's got to be more than low self-esteem.
Well, I think low self-esteem has a lot to do with it. I think that women don't learn how to be competitive in positive ways. And I can only speak to my own experience. You know, the fact is we don't know how to compete because we're not accustomed to playing games where you can take out your aggression on the field, and then, you know, guys have they play football and they beat the crap out of each other, and then they go have beers and everything's
right.
fine.
Right.
Women, you know, women are becoming more violent. I don't know if you've noticed that, but you see a lot more crimes where women are attacking other women, hitting them, stabbing them, that kind of thing. And I think it's a response to this belief by society that women should be, you know, all sweetness and light, and, you know, boys are the ones who can be the violent ones.
Do you think there's a close line between violence and intimacy?
I think there always has been. You know, any kind of intimate relationship is an exchange of power, whether it's sexual or, you know, non-physical even. And, you know, I'm sure you were married a while, so you understand that sometimes you're in charge and sometimes your partner is in charge. And most of the time that can be a healthy, even positive exchange, because you don't want to be in charge all the time.
Right,
but,
right.
you know, I do think that sometimes that power can shift too much one way.
Do you have a formula in your writing? Because some of your critics said that you might be too graphic, too intense, and I confessed a couple of passages in this book, I had to kind of sit it down after I read it and kind of lay back or look away. Like if you were in the movie, you'd hold your hand up in front of your eyes at the worst part. But I was compelled to go back to it. But then I thought, well, maybe that's the reaction she's trying to get from me.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that should be a little disturbed. Yeah, that I should be disturbed in reading some of what I'm reading. Otherwise, you know, what kind of a human being am I?
Well, you know, there's that element of that. I think that I can't complain when people talk about the violence in my books because it gets me a lot of interviews that I'm a woman writing about violence.
Right.
On the other side of that, I don't think men ever get really asked about that.
No. Nope.
I was telling you, one of my favorite interviews that I've ever heard is when you did an interview with Jeff Deaver. And, you know, Bone Collector, what a violent, violent book. And Jeff never gets asked about that. So it's something men get away with. And when I think about women authors writing at my level of grittiness, I'll say it, like Tess Gerritsen or Patricia Cornwell, Kathy Reichs. I think the difference between how women write and how men write is it's much more psychological. That you feel like you're in the head of these characters. And let's face it, I mean, women are more likely to be part of these crimes. But on the other hand, women are 85% of the book-buying public. So women have been interested in this for a long time. I think it's about time women started writing about it and bringing our perspective to it. And I always say, you know, the difference between the way a man writes and the way a woman writes is very simple to me. Because if a man is walking in a parking lot and he hears a noise, he turns around and looks. If a woman is in the same situation, she walks faster.
Interesting.
And so we bring that to our writing.
I wanted to ask you, but you kind of answered this in a way. Sitting in front of me, this petite blonde, blue-eyed, beautiful young lady, what's a nice girl like you doing in a genre like this?
Respecting the people who came before me, I think. You know, Flannery O'Connor, there's the first full-length novel detective book written in America was written by a woman named Meta Fuller Victor.
I wanted to ask you who she was. Good.
And she was a Mormon. She had 11 children. She wrote 80-something books.
Right.
She wrote in every genre, romance, Western, everything.
Were they called dime novels then?
They were dime novels.
Yeah. Right.
And she wrote a book called The Dead Letter, which is the first detective novel in America. And, you know, Poe wrote the first short story, detective short story. So Poe gets all the credit for being.
He really does.
He does, yeah. And I guess, you know, I could complain about women not getting their proper due, but I'm doing everything I can to promote her.
Well, I'm glad you promoted her, because you mentioned three women that you'd like to have dinner with, and Hillary Clinton, Katharine Hepburn, and Meta Fuller Victor.
Yes.
And she was the only one that I did not recognize. I've been honored to have dinner with Hillary and with Katharine Hepburn, and I want to tell you that they were memorable. So you pick good people to have dinner with. But I didn't know about Miss Victor, so... Actually, it's Mrs. Victor.
Yes.
And I was delighted to know that she was the first detective story writer.
Well, and also, you know, she was so successful that she was able to broker her power into a position at a publishing company and to get part ownership of a publishing company, which as a woman is very exciting to me. I mean, we're talking, this was just after the Civil War that she was writing, and what an amazing story.
And that's just beyond the writing, she's a good businesswoman.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, if you've just tuned in, I'm Valerie Jackson, and I'm going between the lines with fellow Atlantan Karen Slaughter. She's a number one bestseller in the United Kingdom, Ireland, Australia, Holland, and Germany. And her books have been produced in more than 25 languages. We're talking about her latest book, Undone, which is a suspenseful masterpiece about a house of terror hidden just beyond the Atlanta suburbs. You mentioned before that your use of violence is often because crime fiction has always been at the forefront of social issues. So is this what particular social issues or themes are you targeting in Undone? And I want to mention a few for you to specifically talk about. The issue of diabetes, the dyslexia that one of the main characters suffers from, and orphanages. So why were those three things part of your story?
Well, Will Trent is dyslexic, and when I was little, my sister was diagnosed at school as being stupid, which back then they didn't really care about disorders and things, but what she had was dyslexia. And I learned to read at a very different level. She's 3 years older than me because of her disorder, because I would read her books and that for school, and I would give her, you know, ideas on things. And so in a way, it was a silver lining for me, but it made her life very difficult that she had this disorder. It's a language disorder. It's not really a reading disorder, we know. Your mind tries to contact the speech part of your brain in a very circuitous route rather than a direct route that people who are not dyslexic use. So, you know, on the other hand, it makes you very creative. It can make you very mathematical, athletic. If you think about Einstein was dyslexic, Richard Branson's dyslexic, right. Tom Cruise is dyslexic. So it's a disorder that is really, you know, there are lots of pluses and minuses to it. And, you know, as a child, I wasn't really aware of my sister's problem in a way that I am as an adult. And I started looking into it and reading up on it. And I thought, gosh, all these symptoms are really good characteristics for a detective. And wouldn't it be interesting if I had a detective who was dyslexic? And that's where I came up with Will Trent. You know, writers tend to write about people who read and who love reading and who write. And you can always tell in some books who the bad guy is because he doesn't read books.
Right.
And I thought it would be really interesting to write about someone where I can't fall back on those usual touchstones.
I found it fascinating how he compensated.
Yeah, exactly. He uses colored folders. He has his watch on one side, so he knows that's his left hand. And, you know, he uses all these tricks. No one knows he's dyslexic. Faye figured out. He kind of told her in Fractured, but she sort of was halfway to figuring it out when he told her. But I've talked to a lot of cops about this, and they said, you know, you're right. He would never let anyone know he was dyslexic because they would just assume he was stupid. And they wouldn't want to work with him, because if you think about the fact that cops are out there in the field and they have to trust their partner with their lives,
right.
They don't like things that are unusual or different. They like people who are exactly like them and who they think they can trust.
Do you still think that there are many, many people out there that do suffer from that and are covering it up, hiding it?
I definitely think so. A friend of mine who advises me on a lot of the dyslexia, I've got two people. One is an actual woman who's dyslexic in Ohio, and she's lost three jobs now because she won't admit that she's mm-hmm. dyslexic. She was in the hospital for a week, and she ate peas every day, and that was because she couldn't read the menu and she wouldn't tell them. Another friend who helps me is a special ed teacher in Alabama, and she gives me a lot of insight into dyslexia and how the disorder works and how it manifests itself and the tricks that kids use, because part of her job is being a detective to figure out this is another component,
right.
And to figure out how to help them, because the fact is dyslexics can be helped a great deal now. There are lots of things that can be done. And so, you know, Will is going to start seeing those things eventually. And getting help eventually. But right now it's something he's very ashamed of.
So why the interest in orphans? Will, once again, though.
Yes, he grew up in an orphanage, basically, mm-hmm. the Atlanta Children's Home, which is fictional. But unfortunately, a lot of people reach the age of 18 and never really have a real home in Atlanta. They're raised by the state. And I wanted to write about this. You know, in Grant County, Sarah has her family. Lena has her uncle. So, again, I write about people who have a strong family foundation. And with the dyslexia, it's let's do something new that I'm not comfortable with. And that's, again, with Will. You know, the best way to talk about a character is to talk about how they interact with their family. Will doesn't have a family.
Right.
He only has Angie, who's mm-hmm. his wife. When we reach Undone, she's his wife, and she's really awful to him. And she grew up in the orphanage as well. So how they interact with each other is really influenced by how they were raised.
What is the one thing that good crime fiction should always do?
Entertain. And I think so many authors forget that. A lot of times they want to impress people with their knowledge. A lot of times when I'm researching my books, I'll find something fascinating and I want to put it in.
Right.
And it's just, it won't fit, you know, because it slows down the story. Or, you find indulgences in first novels a lot of times where you think, wow, you know, they're really staring at their navel a lot when they're doing this. And to me, you know, the hardest thing to do is to cut something, but it's the best thing to do. Because if you feel like that doesn't belong in the story, nine times out of ten, it doesn't.
And it doesn't. Like,
yeah.
Follow
yeah.
your instincts.
Exactly.
Your writing technique, I've read how you really don't have a quote-unquote civil routine to speak of. That you kind
True.
Of like kind of binge writing. But you do have some little ticks where you always, for instance, have to start with the title. You have to have your title before you can start working. A lot of authors name it after the book's written. So why do you need that title?
Well, to me, it defines the book. And the funny thing is, twice now, I've picked out a title, and my publisher has said, oh, we can't do that. There's another book that has this title. And Undone is called Genesis in Holland in the UK.
Oh, so that's why it has a different name.
Yeah, yeah. But they act, you know, they're very nice about it. They don't say, you know, you have to do this. They mm-hmm. just said, well, a book called Genesis is out in April. Mm-hmm. We don't want any crossover. Mm-hmm. And can you come up with something else? And I picked Undone because it's from the same passage where I got the word Genesis.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
talking about Sarah and how after a great loss she's suffered, she just sort of came undone. Mm-hmm. And I love that old Southern colloquialism, you know, and she really imagines herself, her arms and her legs coming apart from her body. She doesn't feel like herself anymore.
Right. Oh, I certainly related to that passage, you know, having lost my husband. The one thing that you focus on most when you're writing is what?
Well, that I'm telling a story, really. And I think that writers lose sight of the fact that they need to tell a story with characters. They need to have a plot.
A why.
A
motivation.
Exactly. And it's such a fundamental thing. You know, one of my favorite quotes from Flannery O'Connor is she was asked if she thought that writing schools stifled writers, and she said, I don't think they stifle them enough. And I think you have a basic ability to tell a story, and that you either have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
What can be taught is how to hone that skill.
Right, right.
And so when I'm writing a book, I'm very conscious of the fact that I need to tell a story. And I think, you know, you see it with literary writers sometimes where they take 10 years to deliver
right.
a book and,
yeah.
and you think, why am I reading this? I don't care about the characters. I'm not really sure what the plot is. You know, and with writing a thriller, there's immediacy to it. And I always think that crime is a fulcrum to pry that scab off the human condition. And when you think about how Flannery O'Connor did that in her stories, or really how any good crime novel works, the emphasis on plot and character is equally balanced.
Why do you think that your books are so popular abroad? Like I mentioned, you're number one in London, Ireland, many countries. What is it about you? Is it that you're a Southern writer or you're a woman?
Maybe it's a combination of all these things. I have publishers abroad who are very excited about me, and I've toured extensively. But I think if you look at the fact that the two most translated books behind the Bible are Uncle Tom's Cabin and Gone with the Wind, I mean, that tells you people are interested in Southern literature. And I don't know, I'm sure you travel around America and you've seen the world, but Europeans have a different view of the South than people in New York do.
Right.
You know, New Yorkers think we're all illiterate, racist hillbillies down here, and they don't realize, you know, we've kind of evolved from that.
Right, right, right.
But Europeans have a very different, it's almost a loving view of the South.
Okay, I want to just hit on a couple of little personal things before we leave. Like, I was checking out your website, and found out that a couple of things you want to do.
Yeah.
Like you want to swim with the sharks in Australia.
I did it. It was wonderful.
You did?
I did. It was at the Melbourne Aquarium, and I got into a wetsuit and went down, and it was right after Steve Irwin had died, and there were stingrays in the tank, and I took pictures underwater, and my dad was more upset about the stingrays than he was about the sharks.
Well, okay, but you haven't done the space trip yet. You want to do the
Virgin
Galactic,
yeah.
The program to take people to outer space, those who want to go.
Yeah.
So you signed up for that?
I'm on the list, but, you know, they haven't really gotten anyone up there yet. So I promised my dad I would wait for 100 people to go up.
Because you
got to
have somebody up there you can write a story about
having
some trauma.
You know, and if the IRS asks, it's got to be research.
Right. What's your next book? I know you're already writing it.
Yeah, I'm halfway through. It's called Broken. And again, it's a combination of both series. We're back in Grant County. It opens with Lena Adams, my detective, standing on the shore of Lake Grant, and they're pulling a body out. And of course, you know, this being one of my books, there's more to it than it appears. And
Lena sometimes get bad reviews as being too mean, too, you know, she cussed too much, she does this. Tell us about
Lena. Know, the only letters I get complaining about any of the cursing in my books are about Lena. And I always want to say, okay, so it's the rapes and the murders and tortures, that's fine, but don't let Lena say a dirty word. Yeah, they have no problem with the men saying dirty words. But this is a woman who works with men, and she's done what a lot of women do, which is kind of taken on that swagger.
Right, right.
Just
to being the first woman cop and all that,
exactly.
Just to be able to be part of the boys.
But she has evolved. You know, something really bad happened to her in Blindsided.
Yeah.
And over the course of the book, she's turned from someone who is, you know, extremely homophobic, mildly racist, has all these issues, to someone who, you know, in the next to last book, she's living with her sister's ex-lover. She's much more progressive. She is changing through the series. But, you know, Lena is one of these people. The bad thing that happened to her in that first book was so horrible that she's sought in subsequent books ways to keep punishing herself.
Oh.
And when we find her in Broken, she's come to terms with a lot of that. She's reached that age. You know, I call it that cake moment when you're in your mid-30s and you think, you know, if I want some cake, I'm going to eat some cake.
Mm.
And you just sort of stop being so hard on yourself and stop worrying about what other people think about you so much. And you know, she's in that position now. But, of course, you know, her past comes quickly back to haunt her.
Well, are you still investigoogling?
I sure am. I love it.
This is a word you've coined, investigoogling.
Yes.
So what do you just Google? What?
Well, it's a deep Google. You know, it's like, you know, you might Google where a movie is.
Yeah.
But when you investigoogle, it's like, what's that rash on my leg and am I not going to die? And you spend more than 5 seconds on it trying to investigoogle it.
Well, it's been a great joy talking with you this afternoon, Karen.
Thank you. I'm finally getting to meet. I'm so excited about that.
Well, you'll be back.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Karen Slaughter's latest book is Undone. To learn more about the books and authors featured on Between the Lines, go to our website at wabe.org/BTL and listen to an archived program. Or check out our suggested reading list for both children and adults. To subscribe to a podcast of the program, go to our website and click on Podcast. Be sure to join us next week for another engaging program, because there's always more to learn when you go between the lines. The executive producer of this program is Lois Reitzes. Producer, Marjorie Lancer. Editor and technical producer, Mike Johns. Assistant producer, Colin Baylor. Opening and closing music by Afro Blue. And I'm your host, Valerie Jackson. Between the Lines is a production of 90.1 WABE.